No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Today I'm in here with my wonderful co-host, Compton AD. And today we are talking to someone who you brought to the table.
Yeah, man.
Somebody you're a big fan of, 19 Keys in the building.
19 Keys, man.
Man, pleasure to be here. I appreciate y'all having me.
100%, man. How you doing?
Man, I feel amazing. How about yourself?
Excellent. Starting off the Wednesday right.
Yeah.
In the booth. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're coming from and what your early days were like.
I'm from Oakland, California. St. Louis born. Left when I was like two, so I was raised in Oakland. Back and forth when I was a teenager. You know, people know me as a thought leader, you know, educator. Also, you know, entrepreneur, businessman. So I've been creating, you know, high-level groups of black men and women traveling around the world, teaching and educating for like the last 7 to 10 years. You understand me? So I built up a platform really just through my perspective, you understand me, on the world, different subjects, industries, teaching people skill sets, everything from blockchain to mindset. You know, they have a show called High Level Conversations.
Right.
So High Level Conversations does extremely well, where I bring in different guests, and I never call it an interview because it's just a conversation for me.
I started to watch a few episodes, and then I realized that I was learning way more about the guests than about you.
Yeah.
So that was a little, I'm a little bit lacking in knowledge, although I did manage to learn about a few other people along the way.
Yeah, I think I do that on purpose. You know, I got a lot of shit in my past, to be honest with you, but it's just not that interesting for me to talk about it. I already lived it.
But I want a little bit of an understanding of like where you're coming from and stuff. So what were your parents like?
My parents, pops from Illinois, mom's from Missouri. You understand me? They converted to Islam after they met each other, had 9 children together, after they went to UCLA and seen the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan speak. My mother was the first one who converted, and then my father followed then into Islam as well after her. You understand me? But he was always in the streets, you know, real black revolutionary of his time. Uh-huh. So for him, he said it was easy because once he heard the teachings, he said it resonated with him already. It was almost like common sense to him.
Right. Interesting. So, like, you say that you, like, got into the whole world of being a thought leader. Like, how much was education prioritized, and what kind of ideas were they putting in your head as a young kid?
Well, I mean, you know, I always said my parents' main idea that gave me was just teaching me I was a god at an early age. You know, I think early on, that's like a god complex. Like, you feel like you can't be harmed. Like, you know, you're impervious to things. It's like the immature perspective of it. But as you grow, you understand the responsibility of having knowledge yourself, self-mastery, discipline, different principles that you attach to yourself, right? And then just the power of the mind, mentalism, things of that nature. So for me, not education in the sense of like institutional education, but like self-learning. You understand me? And like learning through my experiences and my perspectives, and then learning what was my gifts and talents that I can utilize to build and teach and educate others.
Okay. How'd you do in school, generally speaking?
I think I was a decent student in high school, but I didn't really like high school I didn't like the way that they taught us. I remember I had this teacher, Mrs. Ashley, man. She was a math teacher. And I used to be able to figure out how to get the answer to the problem, but not in the way that she wanted me to show the work, right? So therefore, she would either say I'm cheating or she would just flunk me for it because I didn't want to do it the way she wanted me to do it. But I realized, like, it wasn't about developing me. It was just about me passing through. So from there on, I think I learned a lot about people where it was like, if I can just pacify these people and I can get along with the teachers, then they have passed me through, right? So it changed my perspective on the world in that particular incident. Because I think she gave me a big lesson, even though I think she didn't even understand what she was doing at that time.
Right.
You understand me? So I went to college for a year, dropped out because I caught a case, and then took that case to trial, beat that, you understand me?
What was that?
Never ended up going back.
What'd you get caught up doing?
In Oakland, I was accused of being a part of an assault. Somebody snitched, put my name in a pile of other names, said that I was there, you know, but we went through that whole trial. My father and my brother was our co-defendant. And at the time in Oakland, they was really at the black Muslims.
Your father and your brother? Mm-hmm. You caught a case altogether?
Yeah.
Damn, that must have been a good bonding experience, I guess. I feel like if I caught a case with my dad, we would really get close. Yeah. I don't know.
It might have been. You know, hindsight is 20/20 looking at it. But, you know, I think my childhood was wild. So, you know, we had a lot of bonding experiences. Mm. You know, I think the greatest lessons I learned from that, though, I remember going through it, and I had, like, this fat fumbling lawyer. You understand me? I remember after I beat the case, he was like, yo, this is, like, the first case I ever won. You understand me?
Wow. I was like, no, you should have told me that before I even
I'm glad he didn't tell me that before. I would have been sweating, you understand me? But my older brother, he was fighting from behind the bars. You understand me? Because he already had, you know, different cases that he was fighting. And I remember when I was locked up, I think they first got me in Iowa or something. I was traveling through on this bullshit job doing, like, marketing sales or something for a summer job in college. It was the worst. And I remember the cops pulled up on me, and they ran my name just because some folks called us because we in a neighborhood. It's an all-white neighborhood, two black men. Let me cut that off. Two black men in the neighborhood. And when the cops came, they ran it, and it was a long list, right? And I'm like, no, that couldn't be me. So the cops, they small-town cops, like, they cool at the same time. They like, no, this can't be you. Somebody must have used your name. I'm like, yeah, y'all think you're right. Somebody must have used my name. But turned to find out they ran it twice, and it's like, we got to take you in. So they go to the jail, take me in. You know, I ended up having to spend, like, a month and some change there before California came and extradited me. But I remember I was reading this book. It was a fiction book. I read it. It was like a whole movie, you know, when you visualize a book in your head. And it was the first time I had read a fiction book all the way through. Closed that book, and after I looked around, I realized, like, yo, this shit ain't got me no closer to, you know, being free. And I remember when I got out to California and my older brother gave me a list of books to read every time I used to see him when we were standing trial. And I read books. It was like, you know, The Art of Deception, Strategies of War, different books on law, a bunch of different things that it actually placed my mind to where I can start thinking strategically about how to get out this situation, right? And I remember even started researching things about law and different case law and telling my lawyer as far as different motions he could file. You know, I started reading over the case. And I remember telling him one time, he was like, yeah, I'll try that. He told the judge, and it actually worked and got a piece at a case dismissed, right, during trial. And after I beat it, I just always remember thinking about how I never would go back to, you know, just taking in fictional information and not taking information that I could apply towards my freedom of power. And then thinking about how, you know, 80% of cases, young men end up pleading out. Mm. Not because they're actually guilty, pleading out for lack of resources, you know, or just a lack of knowledge or fearful.
Mm-hmm. But so, I will say, yeah, though, in defense of fiction, and I read very little fiction in my adult life too, but in theory, you could learn a lot from a fictional story. And an author, a really truly skilled author, could create a scenario in a fictional book that would be instructive and, you know, based in reality and teach you a lot. You know, I don't really, like, find myself that drawn to it either. But, I mean, I understand why some people do like it so much.
I agree. You know, I'm just explaining what the mindset was at the time where I really just took it rigid.
And like, you really needed, like, real-deal pragmatic information at that point.
You was a lawyer.
No, I mean, you know, essentially when you find your case, you are a lawyer. Uh-huh. You know, I think that people got to get used to doing things for themselves. Like, whether it's a doctor, whether it's a lawyer, whatever it is, you should also get educated in that area of whatever you're going through to at least assist, right, in your freedom or your health or whatever paradigm of subject it is.
Right. Because, I mean, when you think about this, this is my problem with the streets, I guess, is because, like, when you really look at, like, a young man who makes a decision to do something like go commit an armed robbery to get a couple $1,000 or sell weed to make some money or whatever, it's like, I know exactly what they're doing because I was in that place in my life too, which is that you want to get to the point where you have some real capital to work with financially. You don't want to have to spend your life fucking slaving away in a Target or whatever. So you decide that you're going to try to skip ahead in the game a little bit by doing one of these fast cash grab type moves, you know? And then in reality, though, that does occasionally work for some people, but then if you get caught, it's like it immediately takes you from square one to, like, square negative 20, where, like, all of a sudden you have a criminal record, you might have jail time, you're gonna pay fines, lawyer fees, all this shit basically makes your entire life way more of a struggle, and you would have been way better off working at 7-Eleven. But when you're young and filled with testosterone, it's very, very hard to see that those are the stakes of the game that you're actually playing.
Yeah, and sometimes people, you know, even with that, they got other conditions, you know what I mean? Like, I got homeboys, they like, man, my mama, we about to get evicted. We got to do something, and, you know, you don't have a male figure in the household, to look up to. So you know, you may be 14, 15, 16. You the man of the house, and you take it upon yourself to be like, you know what? I got to go get this money. I got to make this stuff happen and then get lost to the system, man. It's a messed up thing.
Environment's stronger than nature. So, you know, I think that it's everybody's nature to be good, but your environment start to dictate your circumstances, how you think, what influences you, right? When you think about your options is really only what you got in your head. You understand me? There may be a million options in the world, but you only going to choose from what you know. Right. So if nobody educates you or exposes you or mentor you, when you think about getting money, you go choose from a small list of options. Right. And so therefore, the streets lose just because there's not enough options and exposure in the streets. It's a limited belief system. It's a limited thinking because it's limited exposure.
If you're only exposed to the types of money making schemes that people have in the streets, for sure. Yeah. You're like basically putting yourself consistently like every money scheme in the streets is basically one that has jail on the other side of it. Like, yeah, there are some things like you could be kind of become like a t-shirt dealer, or there's a lot of legal businesses that people in the streets basically are doing, you know, buying a fucking local store or whatever, but buying a local store and grinding out a profit over years and years is like a way different business model than getting somebody to front you a Kia Coke, right?
And saying, like, as a kid, like, I ain't never thought about buying no store. You know, hell yeah.
Because the capital requirements, you just would need like $100,000, probably more.
Our influences are the guys that we seen with the, you know, I'm seeing homeboys with BMW 745s and they drive in the neighborhood. They getting all the girls, and it's like, that's who I want to be like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They like, hey, oh, we're going to help you. We're going to put you on. And, you know, somebody like a OG Suicide, like, I used to see him getting money in the hood, and I used to be like, damn, like, they getting it over there. I want to be like that. And you don't have nobody in your household telling you, like, you know, do this and do that, or like a strong male figure. Right. And, you know, like a lot of our homes, man, where we come from, they broken.
But that's what kids love to just, like, focus in on the positive and ignore the negative, the same way that I knew white kids who watched American History X and were like, oh, hell yeah, white power, that's sick. And ignore the fact that if you watch the whole fucking movie, it's a movie about how becoming a racist is a really, really bad use of your life. But I saw kids I went to school with who saw that movie and were like, fuck yeah, Hitler. You know, it's like, kids are fucking dumb.
Yeah, I mean, consequences don't feel immediate. You understand me? You start to think towards gratification and reward.
Right.
You know, like for me, growing up in Oakland, I had the dichotomy of both, right? Seeing the streets, but then also seeing the black Muslims that actually had things, right? Like, first motorcade I seen was black Muslim men in all suits riding down Oakland, you know, and they actually own things, right? Like, own the buildings, own their own schools and health services and things of that nature. So I got to see both. So I think my exposure already, you know, made me start thinking about my opportunities different. You know, like, even if in my environment, I wasn't being properly geared because, you know, you're still in the streets. Growing up in Oakland and St. Louis, you're going to get the best of worst worlds. You understand me? It's like whether you're going back and forth between Oakland and St. Louis is crazy. Oakland is crazy. But at the same time, having that exposure changed my paradigm. You understand me? Like, and that's the big thing. You know, you got cats in L.A. that never leave, right? If you take them out the country, it's impossible for them to think the same again. Right, because once something is expanded, you got to fill that space, and it don't contract.
I remember when I moved here and realized that half of y'all never been to the beach.
Man, that's crazy.
And I was like, what the fuck? You live like 13 blocks from the beach, bro, and you don't go there?
And it's good trauma therapy.
And I know guys, bro, who won't come to Hollywood. You know what I mean? Like, some guys, older guys I grew up with, I'm like, hey, come to Hollywood. Come to the club, mess with me one day. They're like, nah, that's too... It's too far.
Too,
like,
far on the highway.
They feel like, you know, they get jittery. They're like, nope, I ain't coming out there. Like, you just get accustomed. And I know what it's like to not travel and see and not see the world and things like that. Like, you know, at one point in time, I used to think my square block on Caldwell and Compton was the end all be all. I thought I was going to be there forever, die there forever. I thought my granny was going to be there forever. Like, you know what I'm saying? Until you started expanding and you got other people to help you out and you start seeing the world, you like, this shit is so small, man. There's so much you can do. You know what I mean? And having problems in the neighborhood, it's like I can literally take a plane and get a 2-hour plane flight.
Right.
And all my problems that I think is just weighing down on me can go away.
Yeah. I mean, and even your enemies, right? Because your enemies usually don't have resources. You understand me? So when you move outside a particular distance, they ain't got resources outside them distance. Mm-hmm. Your problem is usually only in a certain radius. right? Outside that radiance, all of this shit in your world don't exist anywhere else.
And the irony is that most people who have, like, enemies and, like, gang situations or whatever is, like, those people are about as similar to you as you could possibly imagine. In a lot of situations, they live, like, a half a mile away from you.
Down the street.
They wear the same clothes as you. They hang out with the same chicks. They do everything the same. But for some reason, like, this is – because that's, I heard an argument the other day about, like, is a mixed multicultural society – more likely to have problems than a society that's very, very uniform in the sense of, like, two examples. If you had a country that's all black people or if you had a country that's some black and white people, who would have more conflict? Now, on one hand, you say, like, well, black people and white people have many different cultural things, right? So maybe they're going to have more conflict. But, I mean, in reality, when you look at Chicago or L.A., it's not black people and white people killing each other. It's fucking very much within people's own groups. And you could kind of imagine. So I think that argument's bullshit, that, like, multiculturalism causes violence.
Yeah, I don't think that's what causes the violence. I think the, you know, classism, the poverty rates, you understand me, education rates, right, how the environment is developed, all of that is what causes the violence, right? Mm-hmm. The violence is just proximity. If you take that same multicultural and you put them in poverty, then they go cause crime against each other. So then the crime rate is going to be higher against black and whites because they live in proximity of each other. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't think it has particularly to do with race in that particular perspective, because the people at the top, they trickle down affect the issues. Mm-hmm. You understand me? Like, when you look historically across America, you can find the root of an issue. And I think a lot of people just look at the cause or in the effect of it. But the root is where everything starts. Anytime a doctor want to diagnose something or they want to create a vaccine for a virus, they go try to find the root. Where did this virus emanate from? Because now you have all of the ingredients to be able to fix the problem, right? And so when you're looking at societies, you never looking at the people that's caught up in it. You're looking at what causes the root of the issue, right? Most hoods in America, once you educate people, you automatically change the way they think and the way they go about problem solving, where they go about conflict resolution, right? Because now they have more options that they trained on when they think about how can I solve my issues, right? If I want to make money, money be screaming at people all day long. You understand me? Like, you have to try hard not to make money. You have to be good at, you know, procrastinating. Right. Because you go online, somebody trying to sell you a course to make money, right? Yep. YouTube saying you can make money. TikTok saying you can make money. Somebody saying you can get trucking to make money. I seen somebody was breaking down the ambulance services on Earn Your Leisure on how to make money. Money is being screamed at people in a million different ways. You understand me? And at some point in time, if a person really has ambition, they go pick one of them ways and they go choose. In the hood, though, those ways weren't there, right? So when you see drug dealing, you see pimping, you see robbery, you see, you know, breaking entrant, those are your options. So you go choose from those options. So it's like I empathize with anybody that grow up in the streets and that have limited exposure, because I understand what creates who you are. And it's often from your childhood. You understand me? Mm-hmm. Like, if you go out and see an adult man who making bad decisions, he was trained that way from when he was a child.
Right.
And that's why, like, I feel bad for, you know, our older people, you know what I mean? Our grandparents, our mothers and stuff, because, like, they didn't grow up at a time where all these opportunities were presented to them.
That's a fact.
You know what I mean? Like, even like right now, my mom, you know, my little brother lives with me, and he wants to be independent. He wants to do things his way. And my mom, like, she can't see it. And she tells me, like, hey, tell him that what he's trying to do, like, it, you know, have a plan B. And I'm like, nah, mom, he can literally do this now. Like, you used to tell me, stop playing the video games. Can't get paid for video games. Now we can get paid to play video games, and we could do things like that. And it's kind of messed up, because it's like, I think our people would be farther ahead if our parents had those type of opportunities. It'd be more businesses and stuff like that. And it was like, you know, our grandparents grew up at a time where it was like, all right, you get a job, you go to school, you get a job, you know, you retire, and then, you know, you get to live, 10, 15 years the way that you want to live, and then you go, and then you teach your kids that too. It's like, all right, you go to school, you get married, you live this way. And my uncles and them too, they tell me all the time, like, I had dreams of doing stuff. It just, how was it going to happen? There was no way available for them unless they were going to, like, literally leave home and just go do some other shit. And it's like you said, shit is just screaming at you now. You can literally do anything. You can eat food online and get paid for the shit now. It don't make no sense.
But what do you say to the dude who isn't like the charming YouTube friendly creator who everybody wants to see eat food? Because yes, it's dope for that person. Because okay, if you want to be a successful content creator, like No Jumper has 4 million subscribers so that we could pay, you know, 10 hosts, you know, so it's like it's a very like outsized reach, whatever, like the top Twitch streamers, they might have, you know, 10,000 people watching them at any given time, way more than that, 100,000 just for them playing a video game themselves. It's like it's kind of easy to imagine how if you have that sort of star power, how you can make a living on social media. One, but I think it kind of goes under discussed is like, what are the opportunities or how do you speak to somebody who is maybe more of just like a regular person who wants to make something out of themselves? Like, what are your thoughts to them?
Well, number one, everybody that work in No Jumper is not in front of the camera.
This is true. And there's many more jobs behind the camera.
And, and the beauty of it is, you know, I always say everybody got their genius, right? I think the word genius is probably the most misappropriated word in history because – you know, it used to just mean like a person pulling out whatever in their spirit that's attached to the creator. You understand me? Like whatever you got that you can bring out, that's your genius. So a person can be behind the camera and they a genius at that. And the person in front of the camera has a genius, charismatic quality and a great speaker. But you could never do what that genius does behind the camera.
Right.
But we don't look at them as equal. Right. We give one more value than the other. So therefore, people don't truly place the proper value on what their genius is. So they don't really develop that because they feel like one particular style of talent is better than the other. But, you know, one of the things I like to teach is, number one, learning your personality type and your intelligence type. Right. Like everybody don't even know what their type of intelligence is. That story I tell you about school, you know, I'm a deductive learner. You understand me? I like to deduce information and break it down, and I can infer things. That's just the way I think, right? We got a society that don't know how to learn, that don't know themselves. When you start from yourself, then you build outward. Like, I don't like being, if you a type of person, I don't like being in front of the camera. I'm not the greatest speaker in the world. So you automatically go cut out all of the jobs that's going to force you to do something you're not good at. Because when you grow up in the hood, oftentimes a person may go towards a career or a goal that's actually in their weaknesses, right? Like you want to be a rapper, but you're not good at rapping.
Or you don't have the fucking star power. I see it all the time where somebody wants to be a rapper and I look it up. I'm like, bro, you could barely fucking talk into the camera. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is not for you.
But there's so many ways to make money. You could goddamn be a truck driver or you can goddamn go buy a truck. Now, you can't just start off with a truck, of course. But, you know, getting your CDL license is something you can do. You can do it, be a graphic designer. You can go look at the list of all of the things that's on Fiverr. Those are all jobs that people are doing behind the scenes.
But do you buy into the narrative that Fresh and Fit is out here pushing, which is that if you're a truck driver or a custodian or whatever, that you ain't getting no pussy because all these bitches are money-hungry Miami bottle rack groupie fucks? That's the message I've learned from watching some of the Manosphere.
Now, I know some brothers that drive trucks that, you know, they do amazingly well. I think the issue with, like, people that's in that area is they don't know how to make it look sexy a lot of times, right? Truck drivers have some of the worst diets, right?
That's a good point.
So I was talking with my bro, Alex. Shout out to Alex Good Energy. I say we need to start a program where we teach truck drivers. We give them a fitness program, you understand me? So you can actually change the persona of how truck drivers are perceived. So now you think about a truck driver, they muscular and they healthy. That changes because that's a bro that's making $300,000 a year. Now all of a sudden, that's a viable option. I think it's the, you know, oftentimes you become a truck driver, you go put on a flash shirt, put on a trucker hat, and then you fall into the paradigm of what a truck driver is. It's like even what I do as an educator, as a thought leader, this was not something that was just automatically seen as, you know, a popular or sexy idea. It's something that you have to create for yourself. So I think it's up to this generation to kind of give a makeover or whatever their industry is. You understand me? And then women go to that once they see a man, you pulling up, you ain't always in your truck. You understand me? You ain't always doing whatever your profession is. But outside of work and how you make that work look actually counts.
Right.
Because now you're no longer placed in that category.
But just in general, like people these days, it feels like a lot of girls have this real aversion to a guy with a regular job. Yeah, or even a guy who like owns a small business. We've all seen these clips of girls on social or on podcasts and stuff saying that a guy needs to make $2 million a year or whatever. How do you see that? What is this disease that has infected the minds of so many young people that they think that who you mate with is basically dependent on like their financial status and not you building something with them?
Well, I ain't gonna lie, man. Social media and podcasts ruin the game for a lot of people. just because it gives people false expectations on what value is. Mm. You understand me? It's like the moment that you equate value to what a man has instead of who he is, you're already losing. You understand me? Because who he is how he gonna treat you. You understand me? And what y'all future gonna look like. What he has is not going to make you happy, right? That's gonna attract you, but it's not gonna keep you. So, but unfortunately, there are a lot of women who live in a delusion of what value is. You understand me? So they had passed up. It was a preacher that was giving, it was a woman giving a breakdown. She said it was these five floors that they take a woman through. On the first floor, she said, you know, here are all the honest men in the world, right? She said, now every time you go to a floor, you can't come back down the next floor.
Okay.
And she said something to the effect, you go to the second floor, these are honest men, you know, and tall. Right. And then she said, you go to the third floor, these honest men tall and they got money or something of that nature.
Right.
Right. And then you go to the other floor. She say, is honest men tall, got money and always going to treat you right. And it said the lady is giving her the option that you can keep going up. And they're like, I ain't gonna lie, this is a lot.
That is a good visual representation of what dating is like. Yo. And how fucking treacherous it is for women. Because as you go up, like, you might find a guy who has all the right characteristics, and then he gets hit by a bull. Yo. And he's dead. And then you got to find another one. But you have to deal with the rest of the pyramid where they might not have all these attributes. And it's like, at some point, do you settle on one of the lower rungs, or do you spend your whole life searching, knowing that there's basically a big old fucking shot clock on the wall saying, hey, one day you're going to be 39 and you ain't going to be able to make a baby anymore.
And then peep game, the last floor. So she chose to go up to the floor, and they say this floor only exists to prove that you cannot please women, mm-hmm. no matter what. You understand me? So this is where a lot of women are existing on that floor.
A lot of
right
chicks
now.
Are on that top floor.
They on that top number floor five. Right now. They pass down all of the good men with all of these qualifications to look for some shit that don't exist.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm of the 1.001%. You understand me? I don't plan on practicing polygamy, so therefore, you know, you may want a man like myself, but you're not gonna be able to get that because right. that's rare. Right? It's certain things in the world that are just rare. Right, but we've made rare become a standard as far as what you want. So therefore, you walking around with a disillusion as far as what's actually available to you.
Right.
So you can't make your choices based on what's not available, on your dream idea. Most people live in fantasy land, and a lot of people get that whole Disney World shit mm-hmm. where you think about happy ending Prince Charming. Mm. That's made a lot of young girls disillusioned, and they carry that into adulthood on what they believe the perfect partner is. And then you got hip hop and culture that creates this synonymous towards everybody can have a baller, that so-called eight figures, you understand me, and go treat you forever great, but also you got to be a street nigga that got principles of a good man. You understand me? And that just don't exist.
Right.
So you got to first, like, women, if they ever want to find a good man, they got to change what they attracted to.
And the fucked up thing is that the further you go up that pyramid, the guys who are good looking and have money and are famous and et cetera, those are like the number one guys that might be like, yeah, maybe I don't want to be in a relationship right now. Maybe I would rather just fuck whoever. So as you get further up the pyramid, it becomes more of a challenge. Yes.
Yeah, you got all the options in the world. Like, here's the most dangerous thing. This is one people don't empathize with, you know, men specifically, but women too, is that our grandparents, they had, you know, possibly had long marriages and shit. And great-grandparents and before that, but they didn't have social media. Mm-hmm. Social media gave men the options of kings and emperors, yeah. right? But the difference between kings and emperors, they'll have concubines. They would have different kingdoms with different women, and that would be seen okay because of the enormous pressure, responsibility, and power that they have. But today, that exists to where you basically, you know, now you have a database with all of the most beautiful women in the world. And if you so choose, you can actually go send them a message, and they may just reply. Mm-hmm. You understand me? Then you have women that's going to market themselves to you, right? They got their ass out. They got their titties out. They go pay to get their body done to get your attention.
Right.
Right? So now you got young men who oftentimes ain't grew up with fathers, masculinity at an all-time low, don't have no game, don't know how to actually deal with women, and then you throw in social media. This generation has the hardest responsibility of staying focused and being in monogamous relationships.
And the market is fucked up because now women have so much power and they can easily, like, shoot for all the guys who are basically at the top of the right. totem pole yep. of guys. So what happens to the guys who are, you know, acne-ridden, fat, not bad personality. They don't have money, et cetera. What happens to them? Life was already hard for them. Life was already hard for them when I was a kid. But nowadays, it's way worse because my grandparents, they lived down the street from each other. And that was normal at the time. It used to be that like 90% of people married somebody who lived within like a couple miles of them. You know? Now that's not doesn't need to be the case anymore. And so what happens to all these fucking dudes who are considered basically like not of value in the sexual marketplace where they turn into fucking weird ass incels, school shooters, crazy fucks. There's a mental health crisis for young men
podcasters,
even worse. Yeah. But there's a mental health crisis that I think is kind of ignored, and it's ignored because the fucking feminist world that we live in doesn't want to be like, oh, men's mental health is important. We should be paying attention to what they're going through.
And that's the reason why I think everybody made Kevin Samuels the villain. It's like, hey, you know, if you put a man and you say, hey, I want Beyonce, and you don't have these qualifications, everybody gonna say, you can't never get Beyonce, you this, right. you this, you that. But when you flip it and you say, hey, well, you got this guy that's Jay-Z, and every woman feels like, I got what it takes to get Jay-Z.
And they might not want actual Jay-Z, but they want someone who somehow embodies like most of the attributes of Jay-Z.
But then at the same time, women got it bad because of the new feminist movements, because of the new waves of what's taught as freedom, what's taught as sexual freedom, what's taught as liberation. You know, a lot of these things are more oppressive towards their overall happiness in the long run. You understand me? Like, you may get a career, you will masculinize yourself because oftentimes in those environments, you don't have a lot of men stepping up. So women said, no, we're going to go for the careers. We're going to go for the money. But now you got the career, you got the money, but you're so masculine in the energy that you put off, a man don't want you.
Right.
You understand me? Like, because man, we visual. We not looking at a woman for what she has.
Nope.
You understand me? That's not what's going to attract me to you.
But my advice, if I were to be advising a woman, what I'm going to teach my fucking daughter is, the only way that you're going to be able to escape the way that men just have so much control in society is for you to build something on your own. Like, you're going to have to really create some sort of value in your own life that goes way beyond your body or your looks. Because if that's all you have, then you're constantly going to be under the control of the people making decisions based on those things.
I can agree with that, especially to a certain extent, because, you know, when you pick a woman, like, what are you really going after? You want somebody that's gonna bring you some peace, right? So of all the things that a woman can build is herself.
Right.
You understand me? When you find a woman who, you know, let's be honest, that ain't got hella bodies under her belt, you understand me, that come from a certain household where she got that feminine energy, that nurturing quality, you understand me? She's soft-spoken. She knows how to help the person that she's with. They gonna bring you so much peace in heaven, you wanna give her the world. Because you know that nobody else in the world gonna have you like that woman, right? So for her benefit, yes, you know, have some things to where you can have more control and you can pick a better quality of men because it's not based on survival.
Yeah.
You understand me? And that's the difference, because a lot of women have to choose men based on survival.
And we know a lot of women who realistically they're in relationships with some dope rapper or whatever, and then either the rapper goes to jail or his career falls apart or they just break up, and then she's basically left high and dry. She's fucking in her late 30s and she ain't got shit to fall back on. And that's a rough situation to be in. So, I mean, that's just my advice to women. And I feel like it's a lot easier for me to respect a girl if she's building something, if she comes along with something. Like, when you see somebody like a Lil Durk, whose girl's got money and she's got her own thing going, and he ultimately knows that if she left him, she's going to be fine.
Right.
You know? Like, she's going to be all right. She probably likes being in this relationship and everything, but she's going to be all right. And that creates, like, a real level of stability, I think, in a relationship, because you can't just write her off. In a relationship where I have all the money and all the power, I mean, if you're a girl, you don't want to be in that fucking situation, because I get to call the shots on everything and you don't really have anything to bring to the table. That's a bad place to be in.
A woman should always have some money for herself.
And as a man, I want somebody that I can depend on. You know what I mean? If it's not financial, other things, because let's be real, shit happens. You know what I'm saying? If the show was to stop tomorrow, I may be fucked up. You know what I mean? I would want to be able to lean on you until I can get myself together and shit too. And a lot of women, they don't think like that nowadays.
Yeah, no, even in the Quran, it teaches that, you know, a woman should have her own account. You understand me? Like, no, because anything can happen. You understand me? Regardless, it may be your fault and maybe his fault why something don't work out, but regardless, you should never be dependent upon that situation to determine the outcome of your life, especially for your children as well. So I think that, you know, when a woman already comes with something, she got more chips at the table, because now the man can decide to say, listen, well, I want to take care of you. Well, now he has to replace the value that she already has, right? So it's like when I went to South Africa, I was giving a story about the Zulu, the Swaziland people. And he was explaining, like, if I want to take another wife under my household, I have to then give dowry to the family and I have to already have a house set up. You understand me? Because otherwise that family can already provide her a house. Right. So it has to be a financial thing. Right. And it's a business transaction. I think when you look at like marriage and relationships as only love, that's when you lose, because it has to be a logic there. It can't just be love, because you can fall in love with anybody. You understand me? Like, you can slip up being in the right place at the right time, and all of a sudden that chemistry of love starts to create that storyline of love.
But it's interesting how in America that idea, like the idea that the husband's family should have so much to give to the woman's family or whatever, it's like in our society that would be very much looked down upon, because a relationship really is supposed to be based on love and not a financial investment. But okay, picture yourself as a dad and you're, you know, 20, your daughter's in her early 20s or mid 20s, and she brings a guy home and she says, this is my new fucking boyfriend. And he's bringing nothing to the table. Nothing. Like, he's a broke fucking bum doing jack shit with his life. I mean, you're going to be the dad kind of sitting there thinking, and you're going to be thinking, like, why this guy? Like, he's not bringing any, like, and maybe you could see the vision that she sees. Maybe you could say, like, I believe in his talent. He's going to be a big deal in the near future. Maybe. But I mean, realistically, a woman is looking for a guy to bring more stability to their life, especially once they reach a certain point in their life. When they are young and chaotic, when they're still in college, whatever, they don't really care as much about if a guy has money or whatever. It might just be that you got a nice body and she wants to fuck you, whatever. But by the time a girl gets to the point where she's facing the reality of, like, oh, I went to college and now I'm making $35,000 a year, I'm going to need a motherfucker to lean on, you know?
If a man don't have nothing, he don't need a woman. You know what I'm saying? Like, you only get a woman when you need help with what you got. You understand me? It's like, if you got a business and y'all not bringing in no income, it's not growing, you don't need to hire more employees.
Real shit.
You understand me? That's a woman is a helpmate. That's the growth factor in your business, to multiply what you already got. So if my daughter brings home a man that has nothing, then I know, number one, she don't need him because he don't need her.
Right.
You understand me? If he don't have a vision, he don't have something that's big and encompassing that he's working towards or that's already going, then he need to come back and build something. Then he can come court my daughter.
But it's interesting, though, because, okay, if your daughter...
I ain't got no kids, but, you know.
Okay, but...
Hypothetical.
I have a two-year-old, so I barely have any right to talk about this.
I got a daughter. She's 13, and I'm like...
You got the
coming,
one... She's going to be an adult
coming,
right around the corner.
It's around the corner.
But, okay, if your daughter's 13 or 14, 15, 16, and she has a boyfriend and he ain't on shit, it's like, well, you're in fucking high school. Like, it's not surprising that you don't have shit going for you. But then by the time you even... And that's, like, that's the pressure on a young man, is that by the time you're even, like, 20, 21, 22, people expect you to have something going on for yourself, and that's a lot of fucking pressure.
I think that's that's not a good narrative for young men. You understand me? Because even in a society, men are supposed to develop all of these things before they get into a relationship, right? So, like, you got to have a career, you have to have social presence, right? You got to have a certain level of value. We don't associate that same equivalence to women as far as how men are attracted to women. If she looks beautiful and she's good for me, then come on, I want her. You understand me? But for men, there's a lot more value we have to create, but we are also different. I think the problem is that young men don't have mentors and they don't have guides, because it's not a lot of pressure, right, when you really think about it. It's just the fact that, you know, they say over the last 50 years, testosterone has consistently decreased. Now, that can be because that... We, number one, we don't have to do as many rigorous things as men anymore.
That's
life
what I was
is
thinking,
very
yeah.
comfortable.
Less of us working in a field, whereas right. I assume that if, like, I was doing construction all day, I would probably have a higher testosterone level,
right.
But there's a lot less people having to do those kind of jobs now.
Exactly.
Right?
So, but at the same time, men are weaker, physically weaker, right? But it also comes along with less testosterone, less fecundity in the mind, less ideas you produce, and less vision that you have. So it's not just a physical thing, it's a mental thing, right? It's like if you got, like, there's a direct connection between between Feek and Diddy were having like less swimmers, and then it's Feek and Diddy in the mind were having less ideas. So now young men may be producing less ideas, less ambition in the world to actually go produce and do things. Because society tell young men, tap into your feminine side, right? Be, basically, they promote soft life for men and hard life for women. You understand me? You go be the breadwinner now. You go be the leader. And now women are turning and saying that, no, we want soft life. We tired of showing up, especially black and brown women, showing up and having to be tough and independent. So that changes the complete spectrum of the game. But if young men were reared right and trained right, they could deal with the so-called pressures of the world. That wouldn't feel like nothing, right? Like that little pressure you go through, that is actually a qualifying spectrum for a man, right? How he deals with that stress, how he deals with those dark periods. Because when you think about most men, you go, they go build themselves based on the adversity they went through. You understand me? Like, that's how you know a man is somebody, like a man that's living at his edge. If a man ain't living at his edge, he not even get respected by his peers.
Real shit.
He not respected by his circle. He not going to be respected by himself because he knows, like, damn, this is what I'm doing. But honestly, I know I could be doing this.
Right.
Right? And so a lot of males today not living at their edge. They not able to deal with adversity, don't have emotional intelligence or mentors or guides. So if you bring those things back into the fold, it's going to increase their attractiveness tenfold to their women because of how they move and how they deal with the world.
100%, yeah.
And Lupe Fiasco, he said, struggle, another sign that God loves you. I used to hear that. I used to be like, man.
Yeah.
He's gaslighting you.
No. No, but I like to think, like, all the trials and tribulations that we go through at the time, it may seem like it's overwhelming, but like that's what really builds character, and that's the lessons that we get in life.
Because, all right, I remember I was reading an article about some actor or some shit, and he's talking about the worst thing he ever went, the most miserable time period of his life. And it was like somebody wrote an article about him, and there was like a couple hundred like negative tweets about him out there. And I was reading it like, I so cannot relate to this, because the worst periods in my life were so much worse than what the fuck you're talking about. But that is you becoming a fucking rugged individual who's able to actually withstand stuff. And especially like, I said this yesterday on the podcast, I learned a lot from watching Donald Trump. I learned that everybody in the fucking world can be shitting on you and you don't have to care. You could just keep going and fucking be a piece of shit and just be like, fuck it, I don't
care
what y'all say.
Whatever you give energy to.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, whatever you give energy to grows. You feel me? Like, most things in people's life, you can just tell by what they pay attention to. You know what I mean? Like, it don't exist if you don't. I was telling somebody this earlier. I was in a car freestyling, was on live with my little brother, and somebody, most of the comments was really good, but you know, you always notice the one person that's talking shit, and they was like, yo, this is whack, you need to stop. And I was telling them, like, the person that watches fully what you do is giving the same amount of love and attention as a person that loves it. So it don't matter. I would be mad if you wasn't on this live, if you wasn't watching it, because then you wouldn't be supporting me. But as long as you show up, you did your job already. Your opinion and your perspective matters little. Your presence is your support. You understand me? So for me, it's like even dealing with hate or things of that nature, I'm okay with that because that's a fan too. You understand me? It's just they have a different perspective on how they express their fandom.
That's real. I got a question. When did you really start getting to the bag in terms of your life story? When did you actually really start making something for yourself? How did this unfold?
So, you know, I've been hustling since I was a kid, from goddamn shoveling to doing hustles with my brother door-to-door. Like, you know, I sold weed in high school. And, you know, even after that, I think it gave me a mentality of how to make money. So I've always knew how to make money. There's never a period in time in life where I didn't know how to make money, something out of nothing, right? But when it comes to the platform, you know, I had a store in Oakland after I had fired my job, you know, and I decided to just go for myself because I figured if I can make them millions of dollars, I can do that same thing for myself.
Right.
Right? You know, I probably did it premature, but, you know, my will was set, though. My spirit was set.
So you started your own store?
Yeah.
That's how it began?
Nah. It started really from when I started to develop more presence on social media and I could magnify the things that I was doing in real life.
Right.
Like, for me, I ain't start on social media. Right? Everything that I do on social media was something I was doing before. Uh-huh. But I knew I could utilize this to magnify everything that I was doing in real life. So more so getting to the bag started when I was able to address a large audience problem. And that's when the teaching and the courses, I think. I would say the courses was that I had a program where I still have. It's called BWO. At the time, it was called Black World Order. Now it's more blockchain focused, so it's called Black World Order. But I always had a thing about bringing people together. So I found people in different industries that was already doing good. And I said, well, we can maximize what we're doing if we do it together. Right. Like, collaboration is my spirit. You understand me? Because I know how you can 10X things very fast.
But so with a retail store, did that allow you to all of a sudden be able to say to the people, like, hey, come on down, and then all of a sudden you can interact with them and do shit?
But shortly afterwards, I ended up losing the store because the person that was leasing it to me didn't want to extend it. I can't tell you if it was jealousy or whatever, because at first that particular store that I was leasing from, it was known for his spot at first.
Okay.
But then it got kind of jumping, and then it just became my presence there, my energy signature.
Okay.
So, but, you know, hindsight, it's a blessing, right? So I end up, you know, continuing that brand. Like, I had a Crowns. I've sold tens of thousands of these at this point, you know.
You made that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the Crowns, I have a health supplement business where we have nootropics and things of that nature. I got y'all some as well in my bag. I'm going to bring y'all. Nice. That was a family business that I started, because everything that I talk about, I have to build a business or something behind.
Right.
So I always tell people, do business with family. Only time you can't do business with family is if they dysfunctional, because if they dysfunctional, they don't know their roles. Right? But family business rule the world. So family business, we started Goldwater. And that started off profitable. You understand me? So that's a consistent business. I got the Crown Society. That's a consistent business. Then it's just me as 19 Keys as a brand, right? And then getting hired for speaking and things of that nature. Then I got my educational programs, right, where we teach financial literacy, blockchain, mindset, digital real estate, all of those different things that encompass. And that program had grew to 10,000 plus students.
Right.
Right. And different iterations of, you know, creating different programs over time to address the niches of things that I was talking about, and then creating, like, group coaching programs to actually teach people one-on-one to get them results. Because I'm big on results.
Right. So what does the coaching look like? Because sometimes now there's, like, a bad rap that comes along with the whole coaching thing, because it seems like a lot of dudes, you know, Andrew Tate famously has this whole, like, a Hustlers University thing. And I can't speak on what the content is like. I've seen a YouTube video where somebody was basically saying that it's trash. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm sure there's all kinds of different influencers with all kinds of different levels of their courses, but what's your approach on it, and how useful do you think it really is?
So the difference between a course and a coaching program is, a course is basically you create a module where you teach a thing that can be like evergreen, right?
Right.
Let's say if I'm doing intro to cryptocurrency, teaching you how to set up your wallet, what it is, what's the history, what's the basics, right? So if you want to know something and you don't want to have to go do all the research and you want it packed up, a course is great for you, right? So in that case, hell yeah. And then a coaching program is basically that same information, but a person is one-on-one teaching you and taking you through those steps.
Mm.
Like, my framework is, you know, society starts off, especially early in days, it was motivation. Motivational speakers, they try to encourage you to do something, usually using a voice or whatever examples, analogies they can give. Then it was more inspirational. I'm going to show you what I do to try to inspire you and make you want to do similar to the same. That's my leadership. Then it became education. Now I'm going to teach you what I'm doing, right? And then it goes from, damn, you figure that most people are not good learners, right? So education system messed us up where we don't actually know how to learn. We only know how to memorize things. Mm. So education had to turn into instruction. I got to sit there and do more coaching and give you step by step to make sure you actually get the results that you're paying for.
Right.
But that requires more time, so you will have charged more, because you can't teach or coach the whole world at once,
yeah.
Right? And then we got this step now called automation, where let me automate the process. It's like, instead of teaching you trading, we'll set up a bot for you. Or you want to set up a trucking business, we'll automate that process instead of you learning it and have to go do the paperwork yourself.
Mm.
So now we have aspects of it that are courses, that is coaching program, and some of it that's automation,
uh-huh.
Right? Like, giving you the signals on which trades to take and things of that nature.
Right.
So for me, iterating, and I think education is probably, it's one of the biggest growing enterprises right now in sectors. Like, everybody should get into education. If you have a skill set of something that you know, you should teach it. Me, I've been in front of the people for the last 10 years, so I got a different level of trust.
Right.
Like, if I put out a new course or a new program, it's like a rapper that don't put out albums a lot. You can't wait till they put out something.
Oh, really? Because
you know I'm gonna give you way more value than you pay for.
That's interesting to me, because you know, realistically, if you wanted to learn about cryptocurrency, you could probably go search up a bunch of YouTube videos and find a bunch of information, blog posts, articles, whatever. Mm-hmm. How much does it matter that it's you and that your audience resonates with you and that you're speaking their language? You seem like someone that comes from their community, so they're more in tune with what you're saying. Like, how much does that matter?
A lot, because we want to learn from people that look like us. We want to be around people that look like us. That's an innate human trait.
Yeah.
You understand me? And being able to speak the language was never codified towards the masses, right? That's how you keep a lot of people out of industry, right? Language is the most powerful thing. You can control people through language. So if you can break things down simple enough, now a whole new sector of people can get into it because now they understand it. Most of the time, people are like, that's a scam or this and that. It's simply because they don't want to learn it. They don't understand it.
Mm.
Right? So for me, cryptocurrency or blockchain, a lot of people can never get a perspective unless they get it from me, because I can interpret from their perspective as well, because I can empathize with them.
If you've gotten
and
a lot
not
of,
just me, but a right. person like myself.
But you've gotten a lot of people into cryptocurrency. I'm assuming you also have to read some of the messages that are like, oh, shit, I lost 50% of my Coinbase account over the past 6 months.
Well, I don't get those kind of messages because, you know, I always teach risk aversion. You
right.
understand me? Like, there's a risk with everything. I don't teach no pie in the sky teachers. Before anything, I teach you the value of something.
Right.
Like, the thing about, like, let's say blockchain and Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a blockchain. I want to teach you the root of it. It is a blockchain. So you got to imagine this is a new technology that came to people, right? But because we're such a capitalist society, we can only see the price.
Right.
We don't see the value. The value is it allowed you to change the whole world.
Right.
Because now you can build all of these new systems that weren't normally possible before. That's something you got to look at and say, like, damn, this is the biggest technological shift in the world. Let me try to understand some of this.
Right.
Because I know that the future is going to be built on these programs that come. Technology don't care about your feelings.
But what's the average person going to be able to do with, like, a real understanding of Bitcoin aside from it just being, like, a place to hold wealth and investment?
So it depends on who you are, right? Because I don't just deal with the average person. I deal with people of all different levels.
Right.
So if, like, if you got a business, then you will know what's ahead of the curve, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's coming next? You understand me? And then you start building your business and pivoting accordingly.
Right.
Right. Like, let's say on the blockchain, you can build businesses on there called DAOs, Decentralized Autonomous Organizations.
Right.
Right. Like, most of the organizations that you see, you may hear about a crypto business. These are mostly DAOs. And these are what's considered community businesses.
If you want to learn, go watch the Logan Paul video about his fucking Pikachu card that you can own a percentage of
fractionalized ownership
through a DAO. Yeah, that sort of thing.
But you can turn a DAO and make it anything. No
right.
jumper can become a DAO where people buy into it and they basically get voter rights to say who they want to see as guest on there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you 100% follow the guidelines of whatever the people choose and decide.
Right.
So it's a complete community business and they own it, right? And then you can set up the smart contracts to where you can't scam nobody in the DAO because everything is transparent and is automated.
Mm.
Once the rules are set, you can't go back in there and change it.
Right.
Right. So people like DAOs for that particular reason, because it allows you to have completely new business models. So if you're a new entrepreneur or an existing entrepreneur, you may want to add that onto your business.
Right.
It's the same thing with NFTs. Now, 90% decrease in, you know, activity on a lot of the platforms, but 80% of businesses fail. Right. So if you take those same metrics, creating a project is creating a business.
Right.
Right? But a lot of people were just creating them to scam folks, so therefore there was no longevity.
Well, they were getting money in the short term, but I think that, like, that almost has to happen.
It has
to. And I'm not saying that I see a super bright future for NFTs, because I'm sure that there are going to be projects that are able to use the technology and embrace it in an intelligent way. But yeah, I think that you kind of have to go through the scam wave of any new technology. The same way you had pets.com and all these bullshit startups in the 90s and stuff. Those kind of had to get out of the way to make sense or to make room for Facebook and Google, you know?
Internet went the same exact phase. Human beings, man, we consistent.
Yeah.
You understand me? We go through the same loops throughout history. But for me, I always look at what's the value and how I can use it. I don't care about how the market uses it.
Right.
Right? Like, I got one where the simple fact is, my community, they have NFTs, they can buy the digital version and they get something physical,
okay.
right? Because I believe in utility and value. But now those same people, at any point in time, I can invite them somewhere. I got their data. I can create a community membership based around that to where I can give them access to things that nobody outside that can have access to. And now they got a secondary market that they can sell to people that I create value for.
Right.
Right. So for me, if I'm looking at tools and I'm looking at things that is changing in the world and I'm seeing capital come from corporations pouring in billions, if you teach that game to people on the lower floor, they actually can build a quicker infrastructure because they don't have to change everything like a big corporation would. They can just start now and start making profit off of it.
Right.
So it's different depending on what you want to do with it. Like, I don't teach this is just what you have to do with it. I give you the game. Now you have perspective and options on what you can do with it based on what your goals are.
Right, definitely. No, I remember going through, like, when I first, when, like, the NFT thing came out. I mean, I had, like, a couple weeks there. It was just, like, nonstop listening to podcasts and YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Trying to wrap my head around, like, okay.
It takes a while sometimes.
You know, what are the options for me? Like, what could I potentially do with this? And I'm very glad that I didn't really take any of them in terms of No Jumper, because for a period of time I thought about, like, we're going to have an NFT that comes out for every guest. And then I, like, kind of slowly started to be like, well, like, I don't own the rights to their likeness. And how the fuck am I going to make NFTs?
You still got your NFT?
I still have my punk. And we did lose a little bit of money on it. But, you know, it's a long road.
Long run, it'd be all right.
It'll be all right. I will say, though, I don't like those apes. That shit's ugly. I don't know.
Yeah, they had a lot of controversy about the apes.
I just don't like them.
I will say that they created a blueprint.
Yeah,
and a framework that just never existed before because they created a $1 billion business out of nothing.
When I look at what Gary Vee is doing and the apes too, to be fair, what Gary Vee is doing, like the idea that like you basically invest in the creation of this line of characters and then he's going to work hard to, you know, create more value for the IP, that makes sense to me. Because in the scenario with NFT, the founder has to be just as incentivized to care 100%. About the future of the NFT. Because I've seen with Lana Rhodes when she did her NFT collection as a porn star, and she made a ton of money, and then she
just left it.
She all of a sudden wasn't incentivized to really have anything to do with this. She could just withdraw the money and let it go. And that's the absolute wrong mentality, mm-hmm. and she's the wrong type of person to be involved in this. But I think the way Gary Vee is approaching it,
it's a brand.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you go at it as a brand and a business, you're automatically going to have a long-term plan for it.
Right.
And the people that are invested into that. Because if we look at it, let's just be honest. A lot of these things create new systems where you can skirt around SEC and investing rules.
Right.
Right? Because you got to have a certain level of criteria to be an investor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't put it as an investor. These are like more so rewards that you can get to be a part of it.
Right.
You understand me? And what it does is it creates the opportunity for the average person to take things that's normally for the rich and then they can apply it to their business now. Mm. Same way creating your own cryptocurrency was only for the damn treasury, or creating your own money is for banks.
Right.
Now you got decentralized finance where you can decide the rules of how you want to navigate your own money. Like, all of these things just took shit from the top and said that now you got a system to where everybody can do it for themselves.
Right.
And that's why they're trying to figure out what rules should we put in place so that the people don't have all the power? Because that was the normal, or that was the essential idea of the blockchain. How to give all the people power and how to decentralize power where it's not just figures and 1% and families that run everything, but you can actually dictate what reality is.
But I would say that there's probably some rules that should be put in place to protect the people as well. Because
always.
I think
a lot
that
of people lost a lot of money.
Right. The crypto universe is slowly starting to reveal itself to us as being like a lot closer to the traditional business world in the sense that there's
now.
A few people at the top making a shitload of money, and then there's
everybody
all you dumb fucks at the bottom who are getting screwed, right?
Yeah, that's why I only care if we own it. Like, if you don't own it, it don't matter. And I think that's the danger of looking at some of the top companies and some of the top coins and only focusing on them. Mm. If you go through CoinGecko and you go look at the list of all of the coins out there, when you get to the smaller market caps that ain't got billions of dollars, those are the ones that probably got like life-changing technology for the world. But nobody's focused on them because everybody looks at price.
And the only way that you're ever going to be able to be someone who can make an intelligent investment into a smaller altcoin and see the value and decide that this is the next Ethereum, the only way you're going to be able to get there is to absolutely bury your fucking head in the information and spend, you know, countless hours on Google and YouTube learning as much as you can, paying attention to the space. And if people want to make money off of cryptocurrency, I mean, that's what it takes, is you have to basically understand cryptocurrency the same way that we understand rap music. Yeah, you know, you have to be such a nerd and so obsessed with it in order to be able to have any kind of hope of having a competitive advantage.
I would say also being a part of communities.
And that's probably the fastest way to learn, realistically.
And that's really the best thing about anybody's program is how good is that community,
right?
Because when you got people of different varying degrees sharing information with each other, now you got a 360 perspective. It's basically having a research team. If you look at these big funds, they got a research team, right? They got to make sure that you're not missing anything. So you understand the cycles. You understand all of these different things. Then they got bots and automated machines that's giving them signals on things. So now you have an edge in the market. You can't do nothing without an edge. If you don't have an edge, don't get in.
Right.
But it still is important that the average person at least get a minimum education on these things that's happening in their world.
Right.
That's like even you got blockchain. Like another thing we teach is like artificial intelligence, right? Like one big thing that they got right now is like text to image, right? Have y'all seen that with like the DALL-E and the Mid Journey? Like artists is going to be wiped out of the business. So if you're not keeping up with technology, your pivot may come overnight, and you're not going to know what to do because you're going to be relying on traditional means and not realizing that the industries and the technology is changing consistently.
Just like Blockbuster and Netflix, you know what I mean? Had a chance to buy it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Didn't do it. And then that Netflix became the way that everybody consumes stuff. You know what I mean? They got into streaming earlier. And even now, like you said, with artificial intelligence, they showing us right now, like, they're making rappers now. They don't need you as a human. They don't have to deal with nobody going to jail. They ain't got to deal with nobody worrying about the contracts. They're making artificial people that, and it's
absolutely
it's going to keep going.
Human labor is what built the economy, but now they trying to use technology to replace human labor so they don't need you.
Well, every time you go through the self-checkout,
yeah,
I mean, they don't want you working there. They don't want to have to. They don't want to have to pay you, bro. Like, they don't want you having a job.
No, and people don't want those jobs. You know,
right,
like
yeah,
they
that
don't.
Too. That too.
If you're not creative right now, it's gonna be very hard for you to pivot. Like even when I look at this studio and I look at podcasts, I see creativity, right? How you take an existing thing and you think of different ways that you can implement and monetize it,
right?
But that's not always gonna be taught. You have to be visionary and you have to see it. So if your imagination is not solid, like this is the most dangerous thing I think about the hood is that the imagination ain't fostered. Because if you don't have an imagination, then you can't think outside of your reality, right? You stuck with only what you see, right? And this is why I always teach people from a vision, like let's see the future because you can build whatever you see. Never ask nobody what the future gonna be. Ask yourself what you want it to be.
All my successes in business have always just been because I was paying such close attention to a market that I was able to spot an opening or an opportunity before it became a real obvious opportunity. You know, I was paying attention to underground rap. I've been paying attention to rap my whole life, but I was paying attention to like SoundCloud rap, and I was already doing podcasts about a different topic at the time that SoundCloud rap and a lot of underground rap stuff was really popping off. And so I was able to put those two pieces together. And that's been it for me over and over and over, is just knowing a lot about stuff. And even now, like things that I become super interested in, like I'm very interested in crypto. I fucking watch videos and read articles and stuff like that. I don't really have a dog in the fight aside from, you know, some relatively small crypto investments. But I mean, to me, it's going to benefit me in the long run. If I keep listening to podcasts about a certain topic, or if I keep learning about something, eventually it's going to pay off in some way, right?
Time in the market pays off more than anything.
Yeah.
You feel me? Like just as long as you keep yourself in the game, you solid, because then you know when to take a shot. You understand me? And for me, I like blockchain, not just crypto, Web3, or anything. It's just blockchain for me because that's what everything is built on. Everybody else subjects it into these different markets. And, you know, you got people who love Ethereum or people who love Bitcoin, right? Like, all these things become new religions. So I don't get caught up in none of that. I look at where's the value in how we can create our own reparations. You understand me? I don't see nobody giving us a check no time soon. Therefore, we got to figure out ways to write our own checks. So when I see new technological shifts in 1995, the Million Man March was happening, but at the same time, the IPO for Netscape was happening, right? And if we were paying attention and bought Red.com and Pet.com and understand that this technological shift was going to come and make new billionaires, right? But a lot of time our community, we focus on survival and making change from oppressive systems. So we can't think long term because we can only think next week, next month. Well, if this changed, then this can happen. But now we at a precipice of reality to where we can think beyond any borders.
Right.
You understand me? Like, if we would have, if my parents would have bought Red.com or any of these things, they would have been instant millionaires just by buying digital property. Right? So that same opportunity exists today. But if you're not in synchronicity of being present, you can't observe those opportunities.
Right.
Before Bitcoin went to 70,000, Bitcoin machines was in the hood.
They were.
Right? But most people are blind to it, don't even see it. So you're not going to ask the question because you're not even thinking to question reality at all.
Well, when you're living check to check, it's pretty hard to be like thinking about, well, this is going to be worth a lot down the road.
Put all your chips in there.
And that's the best time to think it. That's the biggest thing about it. Like when people often speak upon people that got to live check to check, we talk about things that validate the mindset that they have because of their circumstances instead of the exact why that you should be thinking this way because of your circumstances in order to change them.
A lot of times I think about what I would do if I could go back in time 10 years. And the obvious things are like, buy Facebook, buy Tesla, buy Google, whatever.
Buy Bitcoin.
But that doesn't really get you to the end of the question because in reality, if I go back in time 10 years, I don't have a whole lot of money. So it's like, what am I going to do? I'm going to buy $500 worth of Bitcoin or whatever.
Yeah, that would have been worth $500.
It still would have been crazy.
But no, that tells you, though, like capital is so important, how much money you're able to bring to the table. If you have 20 grand or 100 grand to invest, all of a sudden you could really build some generational wealth, which is the tricky part is that, yes, it's dope to be able to have 100 grand to invest, but in the meantime, for most people, they have to worry about, well, how the fuck do I mean, pay the bills and B, put aside some other money to invest?
That's true, but then also if you go back in those times and go look at what Apple was at that time,
right.
Go look at all of these companies, you could have took a little bit of capital and put it in there and you'd be up right now.
This is
true. You would definitely have way more money than, you know, you have without it. And so a lot of it is just opportunity costs.
Uh-huh.
And that comes from a lack of exposure and education. If you got people around you teaching you about certain opportunities, it don't matter what your capital is if that opportunity is right now.
Right.
But if you don't think long term, then nothing is ever going to compute to make sense for you.
Right.
You understand? My uncle got me thinking long term, and that changed my life. Because I used to think check to check like everybody else. But he was like, nah. He was doing contracting with the government for like solar panels. Right. But he used to show me checks. He'd show me like a $100,000 check or something. He'd be like, you know, this came from work I did 2 years ago.
Because people who do door to door sales, which is still like a relatively it's a real thing. Like people actually still do this, even though we've all kind of forgot about it. It used to seem like all the time somebody was knocking on your door to sell you something. Right. But solar panels, of all the things that they could sell in the world, they sell solar panels because that's the thing you can make the most money on.
And, you know, average person ain't gonna really get solar panels, you understand me? Because that seems too futuristic for them. And now Elon Musk is selling them like hotcakes.
Right.
You feel me? So, you know, what a person don't see, that's okay. Everybody is not meant to lead the world and not be the innovators. You know, as DJ Khaled said, everybody not a unicorn, but I am, right?
But I like that.
if you can realize that what is that you have, and oftentimes it's perspective. Because, you know, my bro Wall Street Trapper and Master Investor, they talk about stocks a lot, right? And they're able to really reach people that's in the streets because you speak the language. Wall Street Trapper will always use analogies from the streets and trapping to relate to how you measure a business performance and value, right? And that really gets people attention because they realize, like, damn, this investing thing is for me. It was just never spoken in my language. So if you create a language outside the context of certain neighborhoods and people's certain cultures, then anytime they hear about it, they feel like it's not for them.
Because I remember, like, even me, I grew up in the fucking suburbs, but it's still like the idea of buying drugs and then selling those drugs for a profit or like stealing something and then selling that made way more sense to me early on than like, oh, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to legally buy product. Like that just, it took a long time for that to kind of compute in my brain, right? Yeah.
That's quicker reward. If I go steal something, it's instant gratification.
Right.
So your brain can already see what the reward is on that.
And there ain't no foundation behind it. You got to keep doing it.
A business requires business mastery. Right? It requires an education. It requires you setting up a structure and a system. One of the things that we have as a people that we do brilliant is we excellent. We can come up with ideas on the fly. But most millionaires and billionaires, they're not good at creating ideas.
Right.
You understand me? They're good at creating systems.
Right.
Right? And once we learn how to put together systems, then it changes the game. I see cats on there that are making millions of dollars on YouTube, but they can't think of their next idea. Mm. Because most of the time, they copycatted something, they took a system, created a funnel, and they made a lot of money.
Right.
So now they're looking for the next thing to invest. So we have all of the ideas in the world in the hood, but we don't know how to create systems or put investment behind it.
Right.
This is why I like ideas like DAOs, because you can take, you know, the people in that neighborhood don't have a lot of money individually, but together they have an investment fund. You understand me? And this started off from groups having conversations about investments. There was this one group, I think it's called Pink Dolphin or something of that nature. But it started off them in a group chat talking about investments and saying that, how about we put together a DAO where all our money is connected and then we vote on what we want to put our money at. So they end up buying the CryptoPunks at an early when they was just a couple thousand dollars. Mm. And then they end up making, now their fund is up to $1 billion.
So you could create value. You could get a DAO to invest rather than like creating a DAO of a particular asset like they do with certain NFTs.
Okay. So the DAO can be anything. They got nonprofit DAOs. They got... It's basically, for me, it's you know, I look at NFTs as new funding tokens, right? But to be able to leverage off your IPO, your intellectual property, right? And that's your intellectual property offering. If you look at rappers nowadays with Web3, they don't understand it whatsoever. But the things that they complain about is exactly what the infrastructure is Web3 is trying to build. You go on social media today, if they want to cut off your profile, they can because they own it, mm-hmm. right? But Web3 is saying that nobody owns it, so whatever you create, you own. So if I, instead of me going on Instagram and I log into my profile, I will bring my profile to Instagram, right? And now it populates all of the data that I own. So the ideas is more important to people that are of the lower class and poorer class. So if you only let the people in the wealthy make that decision, then of course they're not going to make it best geared to you and your situation. And this is why it's important to get people that are more on the ground floor into it so that the infrastructure be built and customized towards changing their class system.
That's why I like what you do and also Derek Grace. You familiar with him?
Yeah, that's my brother.
Yeah, Derek Grace, man, like you see a guy with face full of tattoos, but he breaks stuff down to where, you know, people in the hood can get it. He's like, hey, he's making, I don't know if the video game came out, but he's like, he's making a video game of trying to educate
you. It's supposed to come out a couple. I'm in a video game.
You in there?
I'm a character in there.
Oh, that's dope. That's dope. Yeah, but that's something that's, you know, somebody can pick it up and be like, you know what? This is going to make me smarter. He's doing it a way that is cool. Even like, you know, earn learning systems and banking and everything like that. I was like, man, that's cool. There need to be more people like that. You know what I mean? Like you said, they can speak the language.
Yeah.
A lot of times when you say IPOs and Web3, they're going to be like,
I know.
What are you talking about? But if you put it in a video game, if you break it down with the science of it in a way that we can understand it, everybody going to do it. It's going to make more millionaires. It's going to make more.
You know, the beauty of that, though, is like, I do high-level conversations, so I know certain things will go over people's head. Mm-hmm. But high-level is never supposed to give you the details, right? I'm giving you an opportunity to go do research on new things, and it's going to change your horizon. But I can go through different hoods all across America. I have. And what I realize is that we're smarter than we give ourselves credit for. You understand me? Oftentimes, it's always somebody speaking for those that grow up in that poverty line and saying that they can never get this. This is not for them. But social media completely, not just social media, but the internet changed what people can understand because we got more exposure than any other time in history.
I want to ask you this because we've had this conversation many times on this podcast where when I look at what a young person should be doing with their money, every mm-hmm. time I see a young person smoking a blunt, I cringe a little bit because I'm just thinking, especially if I know that they just don't got money like that, I'm thinking, that's a fucking $10 blunt, and you need to be taking every last $10 you fucking got and investing it into building something for yourself, not thinking about sitting here and having a nice little head high for the next hour or two. You need to be thinking about your future, and I feel the same way when I watch people who are young and they're saving up to go get a Gucci fit so they can go to a fucking, go to a party or something and look cool. How do you feel about that sort of thing? I feel like our culture pushes materialism on people, and I think that that's one of the biggest things that you need to unlearn if you want to be successful, especially when you're at that early period of your life, is that you just cannot be wasting all your disposable income. You don't have disposable income. You need to be saving that shit. And if you're, I think that like when I look at like the way you're dressed, aside from the chains, that might be a little expensive. But like, if I was a young dude, I would be looking to wear like very simple outfits for the most part, where I could invest as little of my money as possible into clothes until I get to that point. Like, how do you feel about how a young person should think about that?
No, you know, I might not be the best example when it comes to dressing sometimes, because I ain't gonna lie, I do. You know, I put it on.
Right. I'm assuming that your black pants and black shirt are a lot more expensive than the average black pants.
You know, it's just, you know, it's just regular.
They got some textures and shit. It looks expensive.
It might be some good quality.
No, but that's one thing that I learned from Derek, too, is like, you know, fuck the diamonds, get the gold.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You know what I mean? So when I see the gold, these are the investments.
Raw value.
You can take that. You know what I mean? That goes up and down. When it's up,
right,
you could trade that in.
But when it comes to... You know, I think you're correct, especially when it comes to the things that we take in within our body, man, and things that take us away from our mind. You know, like, when going back to Africa, when I went to Africa, the Zulu warrior said that, you know, during that time, smoking weed, you couldn't smoke till you was around 40 years old.
40? Wow, yeah. You really earned it by that point.
Yeah, because, you know, imagine, like, it's a war time. You know
I'm almost
you
got, up. I only got a year.
But you got soldiers. The mind is consistently going through development.
Yeah.
You understand me? And when you smoke weed, during a time where you high, you are in a more effeminated state. You understand me? Like, your testosterone is lower, right? And, you know, it's going to mess with your memory and a multitude of other different things. So you can't really afford to smoke, right? When you thinking about things that you want to invest in, like, when you stop spending money, you start investing money. And really, it just means that I'm buying things of value. When I think about money, I think about how do I create value? So therefore, the people of money come to me. It's really that simple, right? But we got a materialistic society for surely that thinks about how can I buy things of value instead of how can I create value. So therefore, you're never valuable.
Right.
You're only valuable as a consumer because you never become a producer. Mm. You understand me? So if you ever get to the point where if you have little, then the best thing that you could ever do is educate yourself, because it's going to give you more options with the capital and resources that you do have.
Right.
Right? Like, if you ignorant, having a lot of money means nothing still, because you can't do nothing with it. But a man that actually understands the game, you know, like my bros, you know, the channel that I partner with is Earn Your Leisure. Like, we teach every single industry of how to make money. Mm. Like, there's no longer excuses. I don't care whether you grow up in Compton, whether you grow up in Chicago on the Wild Hunters, whether you grow up in Oakland and East Oakland. It don't matter. You don't have excuses, because the money is always screaming. The money, but procrastination, I think, is a huge mental health issue. So a lot of people will procrastinate. And that's why you want to smoke, because I'd rather indulge, right, rather than make a decision.
Right.
You understand me?
And it's always going to be the easiest thing in the short term. And that's why when I see...
the worst thing in a long time.
Right. When I see young people just like fully thinking that this is the fucking meaning of their life. AD's brother is a great example of this. They love sitting around and getting fucked up. But meanwhile, like getting a job or like working on a skill or never mind getting in shape or like any of these things that could probably have a positive impact on your life in the long term. And I noticed myself, I'll come home from work. A lot of times I come home from work and I got it in my head, I'm going to do an hour of cardio, or I'm going to lift weights or some shit.
And it's
always easier to sit around and smoke weed. Lately, I've been like a lot more in control of myself and doing a lot better at controlling that impulse. But a lot of people I see, young people, they freely are just giving in.
What happens in the head when a person procrastinate, right? They did a brain scan and they showed that when a person think about a task that they normally procrastinate on, it has the same signals as pain does. Mm. Mm. So it literally becomes painful to do that task. So of course you would rather do something that's more pleasurable, right? So instead, though, the only way to break it is just to do it. I always say don't take 21 days to make a habit. It's a day you start and a day you don't quit, right? Like, as a man, if you want to get something done, you got to drop your nuts and just go do it. Right. I know a lot of people be looking for all of these colorful answers to life, but it's just about your will and how you adjust it. Because in that moment, you're making a decision. More times that you go towards procrastinating, you stay on this side of comfort. You understand me? But on that other side, procrastination is the abortion clinic of ideas, of genius, of everything.
Right.
But to give birth to something is literally painful. Mm. When a woman go through that crowning phase, it's the most painful part. So she need what? Anesthesia. She may need pain medicine, or some people abort the baby.
Right.
But that's the analogy of the ideas that we have, because the average person have had a $1 million idea, just not a $1 million execution.
Right. I mean, a writer, a writer does not always want to fucking sit down right. and write every day. But if you want to be a writer, and I know this just from having researched a lot of people who write for a living, is that the real true test of being a writer is that you have a schedule. Most of these guys or women will sit down at 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock, and that's their thing. It's like, I am going to write for 2 hours every morning and yeah. then do some other stuff, maybe write a little bit more later, but having that structure to it, because we all know that to sit down and try to like create something out of nothing and dump out your thoughts onto a piece of paper is difficult. And that if you want, but if you want to be that, you have to sort of control that. I noticed with myself that the best thing for me is to always be thinking about what my responsibilities are and not really letting myself chill until I've taken care of those. And that's why when yes. I get home, I might have 10 YouTube videos I want to watch really bad, but I also have an email inbox full of shit that I got to fucking deal with. And I make a bargain in my head so immediately that I don't even need to think about it, which is like, you are going to roast through like 80% of these emails, maybe not all of them, but a huge percentage of it before you're going to allow yourself to just chill, right?
And I think young people now, you know, they don't have a sense of urgency because they are, you know, we're taught, like you said, like a Disneyland fairy tale was like, we have time to do things. Mm. So even like my little brother, he's like, hey, I'm 22 years old. And I'm like, nigga. That bro, you need to be fighting for your life.
You're
right
only
now.
22 yeah, once, man.
Man, and it's going yeah. time is gonna pass you by so fast, and you don't want to be on the end of I'm getting close to 30 now, or you're trying to fight and you're trying to figure something out, and you crash and burn because you mentally did not prepare yourself for the world.
I think I've made a pretty good use of my life, but you know how fucking bad I wish that I could be 22 again and get all that time back? You know how well I would use that time if I had that time back?
That's why I give Duno so much praise, because it's like, bro, you are light years ahead of where I was at 22.
It inspires me.
It's crazy.
The 20s, the thing about age, period, right? I don't believe in old age, right? So I got my philosophy of new age, right? Because through every period of time throughout your life, your brain will develop differently. So in your 20s, you know, you have the best brain for learning because of pattern recognition. You can pick up a new subject real quickly, right? And then you can learn it real quickly. After 25, going into 30, your brain is going to change, right? And so, like, through every iteration of life, from, you know, from 1 to 10, from 10 to 17, 17 to 25, your brain going through all these changes because you at a new age.
Right.
Right? Like, how old are you?
38.
You've been 19 before. Oh, so 19 is your old age. 38 or 39 will become your new age. Mm-hmm. You're going to go through certain developmental changes. By the time of 50, we reach our peak creativity. But we don't learn how to develop ourselves at these new ages. So you may be trying to learn the same way you was at 20 when you turned 30 or 40, and now you can't stimulate yourself the same way. Mm. And so you get frustrated, which causes you to procrastinate. Mm-hmm. You understand me? Because you're using your old ways at new ages, right? So for me, a 20-year-old, you know, you got to basically expose yourself to as many things as possible before the age of 25.
Yeah.
So that any other time you want to pick up one of those things, you got a reference point in your brain to go back on there and stack on top of it.
And I was with my friend and his son the other day, and his son is like 10. And to me, from my perspective, he's clearly like a talented athlete. Like he's strong and he's tall and he's like, I think he could really do something physically. But he's talking to me about it. He's like, I love going to the skate park. And I also love basketball, and sometimes I don't know which one I should focus on.
Both!
And I told him that. I'm like, you should do both. And I also told him, I'm like, listen, don't cut anything else out. Like, try everything. Like, I'm like, when you are as young as you, try as many things as possible. You need to go skiing a couple times. You need to go snowboarding. You got to, like, figure shit out because you're so young, you have so much potential that you just don't want to make a decision without having been exposed to a lot of shit.
And then some of those overlap, like, you know, a lot of people don't look at, like, sports as, like, a science. You understand me? But when you think about, like, the difference between what it takes to be good at one sport or the other, they overlap with each other.
True.
So one skill can make you better at another, right? I don't believe in just, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. I believe that you can be master of many trades.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? But I feel like you master one, then you go to the other. And some things that you master make other things easier to master.
Right.
Because 50% of this is a learning curve towards the next thing.
Yeah.
Right? And then if your nephew just document the process, he may be able to start monetizing it.
Right.
And once you make money at something you good at, it makes you want to do it forever.
Man.
You understand me? Like, because now it's the whole thing of getting out of procrastination. So you do the task. Then once you do it, you're going to get a feeling of a pleasure and reward because now you're getting dopamine. Like, damn, I did that. I feel accomplished. So now you start to associate that with a good feeling. Mm-hmm. So now when you double back and you do it again and you realize you're good at it, now it's double pleasurable to you. So now that's how people start get addicted to like runner's high and things of that nature. Doing the thing that you don't like you love it. You understand me? Like, if you know, I don't believe in, like, my, I got six younger brothers. You understand me? Like, you can't talk to me about something that you don't feel like doing. Mm. I don't care about that. It's the logic of it. Men got to move on logic, not feelings. Once you get caught up in your emotions, then you got to go see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. That ain't for me. But you can, we got the ability to, you know, rise above emotions. We was always taught, like, Marcus Garvey on the Blige Muhammad quotes was, rise above emotions into the thinking of God. There's nothing made in nature, right, that's irrational, right? So God's signature is logical. Everything in the universe is logical. A plant has a reason. Everything has a purpose. So for me, finding the reason why, like, you know, I'm a great speaker. What can I do with this? You know, I can, and this was not something that I found for myself. I didn't know I was a good speaker until somebody said, I'll pay you to speak.
But let's say you spent your whole elementary, junior high playing basketball.
Yeah.
And you were just, you love basketball. It's fun as fuck, obviously. Right. It's like a great culture around it. It's easy to understand when somebody like basketball. But meanwhile, if you were to neglect your education, then you might never see, oh, fuck, maybe I'm actually like a pretty mid basketball player, but I have a lot to offer in this other field. And that's why I say you got to touch everything, because if you find one thing that you're passionate about and just start grinding at that thing when you're young, that's dope. But just don't let that be the closing of the door on every other opportunity, you know?
Yeah, young people, man, you got so many opportunities. Just being young is a gift in itself and is something that you can market. Like if you find a kid, right, it could be 15, 16. Let's say, like, we talked about blockchain and stuff. If he put in 100 hours on that, he's going to be the smartest person that anybody knows on that. Now he can become an industry consultant at a young age.
Right.
Mm. Like, that's about, like, creating your own jobs and opportunities, right?
There's I play poker, and so there's a friend of mine, Landon, who's young. He's, like, 22, I think, and he's really fucking good at poker. And it's, like, it's so different for him being really good at poker at 22 than it would be if he was 42.
Yeah.
Because there's just a lot of people who have managed to get good at this by the time you're 42. It really stands out to people in that community of like
experience to age.
He must be a fucking smart cookie because he's this good at this age, and there's something really marketable and inspiring about that to people. So, and I've seen that in the bike riding world where it's like if you have some 15-year-old kid who's amazing at bike riding, the young ass kids relate to him so much that makes his potential popularity way bigger than like a 30-year-old dude.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certain ages, when you do something at a certain old age is special.
Right.
Right. But
that's true.
There's a certain mid age where it ain't nothing special about what you're doing. It's like you're supposed to be doing it. But it depends on the narrative and the story you told around. Like to see an old man in his 60s do a triathlon on a bicycle.
I was thinking of skydiving, but yeah exactly.
But and to see a very young person do it, then yes. But to see a person in the mid age, you say, well, you train, you qualify, unless you know their story that, okay, they just started.
Right.
Right, like even like people out there building brands, and that's probably why I should definitely tell more of my story more often. It's just very much not an interest of mine, but being able to tell your story can make whatever you do special.
That's true.
You understand me? You may see somebody do one thing, but then as soon as you hear the story behind it, it personalizes it for them. It gives them a perspective on it, and now it becomes a solid brand. You understand me? And now it becomes something special for you. You dig? So for me, like young people should start brands early on. Like, not even just a business, but a brand. Whatever you have, what is your brand? You understand me? What's your name? What is the mission statement? What's your principles attached to it? Find, like, three things to attach to that and then be consistent with it. So, therefore, if you ever want to pivot your brand into a business, you already have an existing base.
Right.
Yeah, it's much harder to start from zero than to keep a fire lit by throwing shit on there.
I think about that all the time with my kid is how I want to introduce her to the concept of entrepreneurialism at an early age, even if it's something silly like, okay, you're four, and you did a drawing. Mm-hmm. Well, we're gonna take that drawing, and we're gonna go on the computer, and we're gonna search up how to make a T-shirt, and then we're gonna make 20 T-shirts of that shirt. You know, try to make it real to her, and try to show her, even if it's silly, and even if it's like, oh, we got 20 T-shirts, and we're gonna get your grandma to buy some, and we're gonna, you know, whatever. Like, just make it a fun thing for her, and like try to make it real to her. I was thinking like she'll have a piggy bank, and if she got like $500 from selling those T-shirts, like, okay, we're gonna put that $500 in the piggy bank, and we're gonna think about next time you want something, I'm gonna refer back to it and be like, well, you do have $500 in the piggy bank, that kind of thing. I think
you
getting your kid into that mentality early on is like the best thing I think you can do.
Man, we was teaching children, and we teach them how to create their own ebooks and how to sell them, right? And we gave them, I like to figure out the simplest method of something that a person is already doing that they can just tweak a little bit, and then they got a business. So one of them was just like, we had a bunch of children. They seemed like a lot of bright children because the parents wanted them in the program. So, you know, we said, go tell a story. This is like their homework. You go tell a story, and you can record it. You ain't got to write it down. Record a story of you telling yourself or talking to your parent or talking to yourself, depending on how good and how fluent they are. Then you take that, you can go on Fiverr, and I want you to get it transcribed, right? You go get it transcribed, make sure no errors in there. You got a little glossary index for how many chapters. It don't have to be long whatsoever,
right?
You can go on same Fiverr or wherever you want to, Midjourney or Dolly 2, and you can create a cover for it, right? All of this is cheap. Once you got that done, then you can either keep it as an ebook by go getting you a Shopify account, uploading it on there. And now you tell your son or daughter, you teach them a pitch, a repetitive pitch that they can do with their book, because now they become an author. Mm-hmm. So at an early age, not only they got a business, a product, they got a career. You understand me? That they started and they got a title attached to that at a very early age. That's very impressive. People will buy it just because of their age. Don't let it actually be good. Now they got a good quality product that if you put marketing behind it, it may take off. Mm-hmm. But giving them an accomplishment like becoming an author at a young age, and I got more to how I actually teach it, but that was something that trained so much confidence and love towards the idea of business and entrepreneurship, and it starts them off with some early wins.
Yeah, early wins. That's a good – I like to, like, think about things like that. Like, one thing I noticed in my life is that if I wake up and everything's going good – that by the end of the day, I feel like I can do more good shit. Sure, that I'm chaining together small successes.
Gotta make your bed.
You make your bed. You work out. You eat good, right. You drink your coffee. You get all your emails done so you can have a clear head, etc. Meanwhile, picture an alternate reality where you like get out of bed and you immediately smash your shin on the bed, and you know it hurts like fucking hell. And you spend the first 15 minutes like bandaging it or some shit, and then you slip and fall in the shower, and your fucking car is a flat tire. Doesn't this sound like a day where you're not getting anything done?
You know, a mood is one long reaction to an emotion.
Yeah.
So the moment you have a bad emotion, at that moment, you're going to be reacting to it the whole day. That's the idea of trauma. Mm. You constantly looping in that moment, and you take that moment and you stretch it out for a whole day until something else happens that allow you to reset it. Yeah. So, like, if you don't start the day off with a good mood, you're going to have a bad day. Because mood really determines the quality of life that you live.
That's a fact. Okay, so if you had anything that in particular that you would recommend that somebody would watch this podcast and they liked it and they wanted to tap in with more of your stuff, where would you send them?
I'll send them to High Level Conversations. You know,
on YouTube primarily, or
yeah, that one's on YouTube primarily, or you can listen to the audio. You understand me? I do have books out, like how you were just breaking down a routine.
Right.
I teach people. It's called Paradigm Key, Solution Based Mind Reprogramming. So it's super simple. Like, people in jail read it. People all over read it. And they be like, yo, this has changed my life, because I made it very concise. No fluff information in there at all. Just things that you read, things that you can do, perspectives that you have, things that you gain. So that one, I think, was very solid. And sometimes I forget that I'm an author until people send me testimonials on how they love the book. But besides that, I think that that's a good start for me, man. And I think that if you gain perspective, knowledge, and observation over the things that I curate, you know, I can guarantee, and this is my 100% guarantee, 119%, you know, I can change your life, particularly because I can change the way you think. Mm-hmm. And if you change the way a person thinks, you change their world, because our world is made up of our thoughts, our ideas, our perspective, our philosophies, our principles. So that exposure that you get from somebody like myself and the guest and the information, it will force your mind to expand in a way to where you can never see life the same.
I like it. You're pushing a good message, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me on.
I see a lot of people out there pushing bullshit, but you seem like you're pushing some important ideas.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you for inviting me onto the show.
Hey, Dizzle.
You understand me? I appreciate you for having me as well.
My pleasure, man.
I definitely be watching some of y'all crazier episodes. You know.
You seen him getting twerked on and shit?
No, I ain't see that one. I ain't see that one.
It's out there.
It gets wild out here.
Yeah. So I've seen.
We do it all. We get wild with it. We get intelligent with it.
And that's why I said, like, as much crazy shit that we see on here, I want to be able to, like, bring people in that it can give out some real information, have a dope message out there. You mean, you get everything. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, it's last but not least, man, media is so important, man. What we pay attention to. You know, like, you can tell him who a man is by what he puts in his mind. You know, you don't even get 24 hours in a day because you can't really count nighttime. That's when we sleeping.
Right.
You go get a solid 10 hours in a day and maybe 5 hours where you actually good at making decisions.
Right.
And depending on your brain, it may be a good 3 hours for some people. So you got to change the quality of what you intake if you want to change the quality of your life. You know what I mean? Honorable Mr. Farrakhan got a good quote. You can tell a man by what his hands produce. You understand me? Or what his mind produces, right? So, like, if you see a man with nothing, it's because his mind is full of excuses.
Damn.
And excuses, I was always taught, are built monuments of nothingness, right? But a person that finds reason and they find a way, they have everything.
Right.
Because no matter how many blockades you put in their way, they will always find a way. Some people got a problem for every solution. Some people got a solution for every problem.
Respect. Facts. 19 Keys, I appreciate you, man.
Likewise.
AD, thank you for co-hosting. Gang shit, no jumper. Coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, TikTok, Patreon, Instagram. Like, comment, and subscribe. Nojumper.com if you want to support. And check both of these guys out on YouTube and whatnot. Appreciate y'all.